Here's a quick word from our football educational partners over at the Scouting Academy.
Listen, we've said it all the time. If you love the analysis and you're passionate about football, then you really need to check out the Scouting Academy. Whether you're a football coach, aspiring writer, or even aspiring football agent, the Scouting Academy is really a perfect place for you to learn and develop your skills as an analyst. With curriculum that spans over 375 years of coaching and personnel experience, the Scouting Academy offers you a 16-week online course that you can tailor and build to meet your needs and your interests. Whether you're learning about wide receivers or defensive linemen, you can make the experience what you want it to be. Listen, I've said it to you on this podcast many times. I've spent my own money, my own time, and time away from my friends and family because I am just this passionate about this game. And the Scouting Academy is the place where I really feel like I've learned the most I've ever learned about the game of football. It's made me a better analyst. It's made me a better person in terms of the coaching I do on the field. I can't say enough great things about it. If you have any questions about the Scouting Academy, please don't hesitate to reach out to Dan Hatman on Twitter or reach out to the Scouting Academy online via email. I'm open to all questions as well. Heck, I'm still even a student there myself. Please don't hesitate to reach out. I really think that once you learn all the tools and gain the knowledge that they have to offer, I really think you're going to be absolutely excited about the game of football again.
This is the Saturday to Sunday Football Podcast.
This is where it all counts. This is why we're here. This is why each one of us are here.
And now, here's your host.
And we are back. This is the Saturday to Sunday Football Podcast. I am Paul Perticchese, and joining me as always is Mr. Matt Caraccio. Matt, welcome back. Tear Busters coming to a close with the running backs.
Probably one of the most exciting positions to check out this year. I mean, honestly, Paul, when you look at the running back position this year, I think you see, just like with the wide receivers, there's going to be a lot of takes, man, a lot of different looks, a lot of different people are going to have some different opinions. And to be honest with you, everybody could be right. Somebody could be wrong. It's really going to just be, again, another kind of wait and see approach where landing spot's going to put us, because honestly, there's a lot of guys with very similar traits and very similar skill sets.
Yeah, I mean, the grades for these guys, I think, are very close. We've been very spoiled by the running back classes over the last couple years, you know, whether it was, you know, Christian McCaffrey and, you know, Joe Mixon and Dalvin Cook and Leonard Fournette or Saquon Barkley, you know, and Nick Chubb and Darius Geis. You know, it's been obvious who made up the top three, top four, top five of recent class. This year, I think it's a little bit more up in the air, a little bit more uncertain. Somebody's top five could be very different than somebody else's top five. I know I got a guy in my top five who, you know, not a lot of other people have in their top five. I probably have two guys in my top five that you won't see in too many other people's top fives. So I think it's really a unique year for the running back position. I think the middle section, like 10 to 25, I think you could almost shake it up. If I put their names on a blank piece of paper every single day and said, okay, I'm going to rank them, I probably can come up with a different way I want to rank them based on, you know, kind of what I'm feeling that day. Do I want the power physical back, you know, who can, you know, win between the tackles, be that short yardage, that goal line runner, that, you know, kill the clock in the fourth quarter type guy? Or do I want the guy who brings a little bit of a dynamic skill set, maybe with his receiving ability or his change of direction, his elusiveness, or maybe a big play threat, a guy who's going to play on third downs, maybe in the passing game, you know, but not really a guy who's going to move the needle in terms of, you know, pushing the pocket inside, picking up those tough yards, you know, using that, what we like to call contact fidelity, to break tackles and absorb contact well. So it really is a little bit of what do you want? What do you look for? And I know as we get into the tiers tonight, there are some parts of my tiers that I've really kind of grouped together stylistically groups of players. And then I'm going to kind of use the combine and the next, you know, month or two to kind of help maybe sort it out as I watch more film, as we get some athletic testing, you know, just to kind of say, okay, can I kind of sort through that group of guys that are pretty similar stylistically in terms of how they play and move some guys up or down? And that's kind of how you'll see it tonight when we get to my tiers. Any final thoughts just generically about the running back position, about this group as a whole, or do you want to get right into tier one?
No, I mean, the only general comment I would say is that everybody out there knows that, you know, I've been actively kind of toying around with my process and kind of the way I look at the actual game and the lenses I try to take when I'm looking at these players. And really, in all honesty, it's been a learning process for me. I've really been kind of going back to kind of the workbench, so to speak, and really asking myself, you know, those tough questions. You know, what is it that I consider to be the variables and the things that they're identifying with on the field? Why are they behaving as movers the way they are? And it's really created a lot of chaos for me. So I'm pretty sure that my thoughts and feelings on players will change. But the biggest thing that I learned as I kind of started learning this process and thinking about them as problem solvers is I really started to see that there are guys that are just very different runners between the tackles as they are at the perimeter. And I mean that in so many ways. There are guys that are just, they're just way more adept at running between the tackles as opposed to running on the outside. And it doesn't have to do with pure speed. It has nothing to do with that. It just has to do with the way in which they organize themselves in terms of their movement behavior, in terms of their just understanding of what's going on in space. And I think there's a lot of guys in this class. There are very few that can really do both with ease. So I think there's a lot of interest here in this class, and there's some elements that'll make them really different than classes from the previous years. So let's see how it goes, Paul. Let's just get right into it.
Yeah, so let's start by saying what constitutes our tier one. It's a potential round one NFL draft selection. In the terms of the dynasty fantasy spin, it's a top six dynasty rookie pick. We're thinking they're day one starters. Many traits are above average, with at least one being rare to elite. These players can or should be the focal point of the running game with the ability to contribute in the passing game as well. So that's what kind of makes up our tier one. Right now, for me, my tier one's one name. I only think there's one guy that I would pound the table for as a round one pick that I think is a guy who could immediately, you know, contribute in all aspects, has at least one trait of being rare to elite, and that's Josh Jacobs out of Alabama. I know he doesn't have the production and the gaudy statistics, but to me, he's the most complete running back in this class. He's got the size, he's got the frame, he's got the athleticism, he's got the, what we say, contact fidelity. He could deliver punishment, he could absorb contact well, keep pushing, breaking tackles. He's got burst and quickness to his game. He can make people miss in the open field. He's got some change of direction and agility. And he's a really good receiver out of the backfield who can run routes, even though he might not have lofty, you know, actual statistics in that area. To me, he's somewhere of a blend between a Mark Ingram, Sony Michel type in terms of his physicality and his strength, and then the versatility of a guy like Alvin Kamara. He doesn't have maybe as much juice or wiggle, if you want to say, in terms of shiftiness as maybe Alvin Kamara, but he's got a good amount of it. So I kind of say blend those guys together and kind of somewhere in between those stylistic players, that's where I kind of see Josh Jacobs.
Well, I mean, actually, you know, my tier itself has Josh Jacobs at number one, which is probably no shocker to everybody out there. But what I do have as well is I actually have David Montgomery in there as well. And the reason why I have him is, first of all, going back to Josh Jacobs before we get into it, Paul, I think you're 100% right. I think there's just a lot to like about him. And I wouldn't really, you know, add too much except to say that, you know, when you really look at him, when you look at that contact fidelity element that we keep talking about, you know, it has a lot to do with his awareness. You know, when you watch him run the football, there's not a moment that passes where he's not beginning to brace or he's not aware of what the angle of attack of the defender is or what that approach velocity is of that defender. He understands the space very well, and he's very aware of what's going on around him. He even has something that I'm really toying with as a word. I'm not really sure where to go with it, but he has what I would call like almost like a bulldozer type of affordance to him, where offensive linemen will actually use him as a way of pushing the pile because his contact fidelity, because his balance is so good. He offers his offensive linemen an opportunity to kind of get in on the offensive play. Not many backs can do that. Not many backs can take a hit and then still maintain their balance, their footwork, and their intent of moving forward and allow their blockers to really contribute to moving the chains. You know, it looks like that quintessential where it's like everybody's piling up and pushing forward. He offers that. And there's something special about that. That's not something to be taken lightly. Backs that can do that are backs that are extremely good in contact. They're great in collisions. They're able to reshape. They're able to regain their balance. They're able to use the forces, the dynamic forces of the tacklers, to really almost create stability. And then their blockers can actually use them to push the ball forward. So one very, that's really interesting. The only thing I would say about Josh Jacobs is I think there's room for him to develop as a route runner. I think there's more of a variety of routes that he can develop as he keeps developing more. So I would say to him, you know, keep looking at that route tree and what you can develop, because your sensitivity to the game is extremely amazing. And I think there's more that you can be doing as a route runner. And also just on perimeter runs at times, you'll notice that he has what I would call kind of integration issues. He has trouble really kind of finding the right tempo to kind of get himself integrated into the blocking scheme. Sometimes he's very good, but then there's times on the perimeter where he'll be out of sync, where he's attacking the hole or attacking the gap really before the actual gap has really opened up by the offensive lineman. So I think there's so much, there's little tweaks like that that I think he could develop on, and I think he could take his game to the next level. Whereas if you look at a guy like David Montgomery, who I'm sure, Paul, he must be coming up for you soon. David Montgomery, to me, I mean, when I watch him, I see very, 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 very special blend of cutting and re-acceleration strategies. This is a guy who can literally leverage everything from a quick crossover cut to a lunge cut to a power cut to a jump cut to a spin. All of these cutting to re-acceleration strategies makes him really tough to deal with, because he's never really without speed. He's able to do all of these things while still being able to get back to top acceleration, and he's able to do that in an instant. And there's not many backs in this draft that can really combine the number of strategies when it comes to making guys miss, if we're going to use that kind of that way of talking about it. There's not that many guys in this draft that has as many blend of strategies for making guys miss as Montgomery does. So when I look at him, he has such a good sensitivity both inside and outside on his runs. He really does offer a versatile package in terms of an offensive coordinator's ability to leverage both interior and outside runs. And like I said to you, that's something that seems to be coming more into focus as we look at the problems on the football field for these running backs to solve. David Montgomery can really solve a variety of problems, whether it's between the tackles or on the outside. He really doesn't have too much trouble making all of those running games work. Now, we can argue whether or not he's actually as fast as Josh Jacobs, and I actually don't think he is. I don't think his actual pure acceleration or explosive strength is the same as Josh Jacobs, nor do I think it's even remotely in the, I don't know, top 10% of the class. He's probably in the middling of the classes in terms of their acceleration. But his play speed, his overall play speed is extremely good. His explosive strength goes beyond just his acceleration, but like I said, into the way he can make cuts. He can lunge cut, which gives him that versatility to really make multi-directional changes without losing speed. He can do quick little cross cuts when he needs to, and he times them so well that he's able to make guys miss in the open field, whether it's behind the line of scrimmage or past the line of scrimmage. And as a receiver, I mean, in 2017, he had 36 receptions for 296 yards. Now, I'm not going to say to you that means that he's, you know, Christian McCaffrey out of the backfield. I don't think there's anybody like that, really. You know what I mean? But I mean, he's competent, and he's competent enough where I wonder if we're looking at him in screens, in dump offs, if we're looking at him running like a tree that's traditional to a running back, you know, little like outs out of the backfield. I think he's more than competent. And I think for that reason, because of the versatility he has as a runner, because of the, if we're going to call it, like we said, that cutting re-acceleration strategy, because that toolbox is so rich, There's not many schemes he can't run in. There's not many concepts he can't execute from at the running back position. The only thing I'll say is I'd like to see him do a little bit more in pass protection. You know, I'd like to see him do just a little bit more. You know, he has that intensity. He has that ability to meet, you know, blockers in the hole with intensity and contact fidelity. Why not do that in the running game? So I think there's room for him to develop that like almost every back can, but I think that he can do that and he can develop that and it'll put him out there on the island where I think he can be competent. So Montgomery slips into my next player in that tier.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm a big fan of David Montgomery. You're going to hear him early in my tier two coming up. I think a lot of what you said about his game fits. I guess when I broke my tiers down, I kind of did whether I should or shouldn't have. I kind of incorporated where I kind of put guys over the last couple of years that we've been doing this. And I just kind of asked myself on a talent and skill level, for me, did I feel comfortable putting a guy like David Montgomery in the same tier as guys that I had put over the last couple of years there, whether it's Joe Mixon, Christian McCaffrey, those type of guys. And for me, he just wasn't on that level. I think he's a very good player. I agree with most of your takes on David Montgomery. I think he could be a very good receiver, you know, not maybe a guy like who's running routes like, you know, Alvin Kamara or Christian McCaffrey. But we saw Ezekiel Elliott this year, you know, be a big part of the Dallas passing game and catch over 70 passes. David Montgomery's pass catching receiving ability is just as good as a guy like Ezekiel Elliott's. So he, if not better, so he can be an integral part of the passing game just on more of the stuff that you were talking about, that shorter type stuff. So he's at the top of my tier two. I wouldn't have put it at a first round grade on him if I was an NFL team. I think he'd be more of a guy I'd be starting to look at day two, and I'd probably pivot to a different position in round one, but I am a big fan of his game. So let's take it to tier two, and then I'll run through the rest of my guys that are in my tier two with David Montgomery. Tier two is a guy that we consider a round two to mid-round three running back prospect. So we think these guys are day two caliber prospects, and you know that's where we would feel comfortable them being selected. In terms of the dynasty spin, we think they're round one to early round two dynasty rookie picks. Obviously, landing spot opportunity carries a lot of weight, as always, especially at the running back position. We believe they're a lead running back in a committee. They have several traits that are above average to good. These players can and should contribute immediately to the running game and have the capacity to contribute to the passing game as well. There are concerns about their ability to potentially be a three-down back. You know, so that's why maybe they're a part of a committee where we think they can develop into the plus side of that committee. My tier two is pretty deep. It's seven players deep. And honestly, these seven players, there's a razor thin margin between all seven of these guys. I'm talking, you know, I can make a case for any one of these next seven guys to be my number two, my number six, my number seven, my number eight, or anywhere in between. You know, I think for me, it's a clear difference between Josh Jacobs and then the next seven guys. But these seven guys, I'm fans of all their game. They're not all going on day two. So some of these guys are going to be sitting there when we start the third day of the NFL draft, probably, and they're going to present tremendous value. My tier two is Rodney Anderson out of Oklahoma. I think if he didn't have three surgeries on his track record, I think you're talking about a three down running back who would be considered a first round prospect. I think he could do it all. Good size, good frame. Strength, agility, receiving ability. I really like Anderson's game. It's unfortunate. The injuries have probably derailed him. He's probably going to be a day three pick. So right now, while I'm taking into account just my film eval on him, my ranking of him does not take into account the injury factor. David Montgomery, as we talked about, he's next in my tier two, followed by Damian Harris out of Alabama. I think Harris has kind of became the forgotten man in this running back class because he doesn't have as much pizzazz as Josh Jacobs. But I think Damian Harris is rock solid. I think he's a Mark Ingram type. He's not elite at anything, but he's really good to very good at just about everything. And I think Damian Harris is a guy who NFL teams are going to like a lot more than maybe what you're seeing on draft Twitter from the fantasy people, from the scouting people. I think they're a little bit too down on Harris. I think he's a very good all-around player who's kind of been a little bit forgotten here in the shuffle. Next for me is Miles Sanders out of Penn State. He's one of those guys who I was saying, I don't think you're going to see him in a lot of people's top fives. But I really like Miles Sanders. I mean, he had the inevitable task of replacing Saquon Barkley, and I think he looked really good this year. For a guy his size, I think he came in at like 220 pounds. He has really good cutting ability. In short spaces, in short areas, he can make people miss at his size, at his frame. I think he's got good burst, good acceleration, former kick returner. There's been some statistics that show good kick returners in college football, you know, have a better success rate of translating for whatever that's worth. But we've seen Miles Sanders have some explosive kick returns. I think he's a pretty complete player. I think he's a player, you know, after this, I think he's the last guy on my list who I think could be a three-down player. You know, I think Jacobs, Anderson, Montgomery, Damian Harris, and Miles Sanders have the most capability of being three-down players. I really like Miles Sanders' overall game. And then my tier ends out with Devin Singletary out of Florida Atlantic, Travion Williams out of Texas A&M, and Darrell Henderson out of Memphis. They are all really unique players in their own right. Devin Singletary, very small, but very, very quick, very athletic, doesn't have great long speed, but it's his agility, change of direction, elusiveness, cutting ability that makes him really a lethal weapon. Travion Williams got long speed, got burst, got acceleration, got receiving ability, and he's one of the best pass protectors in the class at the running back position. His issue sometimes is his vision, his patience, his areas where he's got to improve. He's also a little bit undersized, so might be more of a committee guy. And then Darrell Henderson out of Memphis. He's got burners. He's got ridiculous production at the collegiate level, but you watch that closely. He's got massive holes also. So while I think he has really good burst, really good acceleration, I don't know if we've seen him enough in like close quarters, which is what it's going to be like in the NFL, for me to feel 100% comfortable saying, yeah, he's going to be a really productive runner, you know, all the time in traffic, making people miss that way. I've seen burst and explosion and acceleration out of him, but I still want to see more of a complete game out of him. I think Singletary, Williams, and Henderson are perfect in today's world of the NFL of everyone having two backs. So it's a unique tier, 2 through 8. I can mix it up. I can shake it up. And I think all of these guys are warranted of potentially being day two picks.
Yeah, I mean, listen, going back to your point, just to round it out, I mean, going back to your point on Montgomery, I can easily see Montgomery falling into day two, and I wouldn't be shocked if he actually does do that. And going into this tier, we share many of the same names. I'm just going to run through my tier just in case, you know, I missed a couple of things that you might have said. But when I look at my tier two, I've got Rodney Anderson next. I've got Damian Harris following that. And then there's a little bit of a shakeup here because when I look at the again, and I think you put it really nicely when you talked about the current NFL landscape, I do see a place where, you know, Darrell Henderson and Devin Singletary and Travion Williams and Justice Hill and Miles Sanders, those guys can definitely all be shaken up in a bag. And I think we could be very, very confident with either one and who they can be. However, I'm going to end with two more guys that you didn't mention. And forgive me if I misheard you. I don't know if you mentioned these guys specifically, but I had Elijah Holyfield and I have Mike Weber. And I have them in this tier because for me, those are two guys that when I think about this particular, you know, this particular area of the actual list, I kind of look at a guy like Elijah Holyfield, and he was a guy who really, really jumped off the film to me this particular offseason as I was looking at him again. And, you know, I think there's a lot of room to understand where and where there's concerns for him, but I also like some things that he brings to the game. I think in terms of his strength, he has that explosive strength, that acceleration. He has that contact fidelity where he can spin and ride contact, or he uses a nice stiff arm at times to redirect force and redirect contact. I think he's going to be really good, you know, at the next level in collision situations. I think he's ready for the NFL in that way. I think he has a very, very similar running style to a Leonard Fournette in the way that he attacks opposing defenders. He's very functional, I think, in terms of his agility, especially on interior runs, and he can find cutback lanes, I think, with pretty good ease on interior runs. Concerns, there's a lot of concerns, but these concerns are more developmental concerns, concerns where I think if you can put it all together, I think you're going to see Holyfield potentially emerge into a lead back role, because I have him and I have Weber right on the fringe of being either the head of a committee or being part of a committee on the regular basis. So here's where he can kind of, you know, kind of improve his game. You know, he does favor pressure or jump cuts in space, and he doesn't really have many solutions beyond that. When it goes to looking at him and the way he actually runs, hold on, excuse me. When you look at his solutions in space, he doesn't really have many. Other than a jump cut and a pressure cut, there's not much there. I did see a hurdle. I did see at times he did a hurdle once in a while, but I didn't see a variety of things that he did in space. So when you look at him, you see that a player that really prefers contact, and he doesn't really have a variety of solutions in space. He's not very sensitive, I feel, to pursuit angles in the open field. I think he needs to take advantage a little bit more of the affordances of his blockers, especially at the second level. So I think there's, you know, we would call it patience. I think he's really just not sensitive to what opportunities he has when his blockers are actually creating for him. I think he gets a little impatient, you know, on the perimeter, but that doesn't mean that I think that he recognizes there's something that he can be doing differently. I think it's more or less like he just needs to literally start working on different environments where he's going to be out in space more, and he's got to get a little bit more connected to all those opportunities that exist when he's out in space, specifically his blockers. In pass pro, I think he needs to do a better job at first contact. He's a very strong young man, and I think he should be a very good pass blocker. I think he has room for there to improve. And I think his receiving ability is still somewhat of an unknown. I mean, he only had 5 receptions for 40 yards. Hardly what I would call, you know, an expansive display of receiving ability. But I think that when I look at him as a runner on the interior, what he can do to get those tough yards, he has enough speed and acceleration, you know, to break a big play. He's a player that I think, even though he's towards the bottom of my second tier, I see a lot of room for him to grow. Also, we talked about Mike Weber. I think Mike Weber is a player that's still flying vastly under the radar. I think he can win in tight spaces. I think he can win in open spaces. I think he can catch the football in a fundamental way. I think he just happened to be unlucky enough that he played in the backfield with J.K. Dobbins. And J.K. Dobbins really was a player that, you know, they rode. But this year, you know, Mike Weber wasn't bad. I think he has a lot of potential in him to really, really surprise at the next level and be a vastly underutilized guy. I think he's a guy that, again, could see himself be a regular part of a committee, or he could end up emerging as a lead part of a committee. I really do see that from Mike Weber, and I really think he has the talent to emerge in that way. Also, Justice Hill. When I look at Justice Hill, I really like Justice Hill a lot. And Justice Hill is the type of player that, you know, he has, I mean, I've seen him described in some areas as being almost a little too kind of crazy when he's running, but I don't necessarily see it that way. You know, I see his strengths as being his deacceleration to reacceleration strategies are very varied. I see a player who really understands how to coordinate his different capabilities in tight spaces. He has a pressure cut. He has a spin move. In terms of contact fidelity, he has really good awareness of pursuit angles of his opponents, and he does a nice job maintaining distance and limiting the tackling surface of players as a way of dealing with collisions. So despite the fact that he's only 5'10", 185, he does a really nice job mitigating contact by using that stiff arm. And he doesn't do a stiff arm in order to see, like, guys use stiff arms in different ways. Some guys use stiff arms to attack opponents, and others of them almost use it as a way of, like, kind of like when you're waking up in the middle of the night and you're looking for the light switch, you're kind of feeling out into the middle of your room with your hands as a way of gathering information. I think that's kind of what some of these guys are doing at times with their stiff arm. They're doing it in a way to kind of make sure almost that they're keeping a platform of mobility around them so they can move if the tackler were to come near him. So they use it as a way of gauging distance. And I see him doing that often. And he does that to maintain his limited tackling surface, but also maintain his mobility. I think he's very functional when it comes to manipulations before hitting the line of scrimmage. I think he has a good idea of how to manipulate first and second level defenders. He does that in a very functional way. He does that using his initial track, which is sometimes something that players don't do. They don't really stay true to the landmark of the running play. And as a result, they actually don't really influence that second level defender as much as they should. But Justice Hill does do that. He does do that very well. So, I mean, his wide receiver ability, you know, his ability as a wide receiver, again, only 13 receptions this past year. He had 31 the previous year. I mean, he's a player who does have a larger kind of toolbox of abilities to bring to the table. He needs to develop, I think, greater sensitivity to integrate his acceleration within blocking schemes on interior runs specifically. I think he's a little bit more better in space right now. So that's why I would kind of stick him in a zone scheme for right now. And I think he really does belong in a committee. And I think he could be either the better part of the committee or he can end up being a consistent part of the committee. So I actually like him as a potential lead committee guy because of his versatility. So he's another guy that I really enjoy and I think is really good in this tier.
Yeah, listen, I mean, you just brought up three additional names there in your tier two that I didn't have in my tier two. And those names were Justice Hill, Elijah Holyfield, and Mike Weber. They're all in my tier three. My tier three is actually a very small tier of only four names. And those are three of the four guys that are in my next tier. So I'm not that far off on what you think of these guys as players. You know, it's just that I kind of felt like I had too many guys towards the top, you know, in terms of, you know, sometimes I try to play the game of, you know, how many guys could potentially go in the top two rounds or the top three rounds. I'm like, okay, some of these guys are going to fall.
You're being responsible. I'm living in fantasy land. I'm living in fantasy land. I've got like six guys that can be either a committee back or not. Like, you know, I mean, listen, because you know what it is, Paul, as much as we want this to model it, you know what? I kind of made my peace with it. And I think you brought up a good point earlier. You tried to say who's going to really go in round one compared to other round one guys. You know what? I kind of look at it is this year, who do I think really goes in round one and round two? How many guys could be in those roles? And I take it year by year. So, I mean, it's just the same. It's the same question, just a different spin.
Yeah. I mean, listen, we're both on the same page in terms of what we think about most of these guys in terms of their skill level and their talent. The thing is that, you know, when we try to sometimes do these tiers and we try to, you know, kind of basically hit on a variety of different things from NFL draft round to dynasty round to traits and skill, it sometimes is hard to fit in all those qualities. I have Miles Sanders in my second tier. I don't think Miles Sanders, though, is going round two to mid round three. I think he's going to end up being more of a round three, round four guy, but I believed in the talent and skill too much to put him down in my next tier just because I think that's where the draft projection for him is going to be. So these tiers sometimes they're a little bit different, you know, than sometimes, you know, just saying, okay, these are my guys. You know, we're trying to hit on a variety of things, but some guys, it still comes down to these tiers are still our skill level and our rankings. And sometimes we know it's not going to match up with actual NFL draft projection round.
You know what, Paul, and just to add to the Miles Sanders discussion, because I'm right there with you, as you heard. I mean, I'm right there with you. I know you and I are big fans of him. The problem that I saw, and I don't know if you can share this as well, the concerns, the areas of improvement and development, I think that scare team off that are going to really scare teams off about him is that his play speed, specifically when you look at his interior running, really wasn't really that calibrated to the blocking schemes. Meaning when we say calibrated, I'm talking about the fact that Miles Sanders, Paul, like you, as you said, really eloquently, he's got a lot in his toolbox athletically, as well as in his moves in the open field. But we don't see that on the interior running plays. We see a lot of hesitancy. People say he's indecisive. He lacks patience or he's not effective as an interior runner. I don't see that. I see that as a player who's just not comfortable yet. I don't see that as lacking ability. I see it in tangential problems where he is explosive, where he is elusive. He just hasn't really connected the dots to make it effective as an interior runner. So if you kind of spin it that way as a problem solver, he's solving similar problems in different areas of the field. He just hasn't put it together in every area of the field. Where did you see some of the reasons why you think he's going to go a little later? I don't want to make this the Miles Sanders show, but I mean, we are categorically, Paul, very different than most people on him.
Yeah, listen, I mean, I think that's one area where I think you can make the case. I think there is some inconsistency in terms of his production level. You see some highs and lows, and is that him? Is that the scheme in that game? Is it the, you know, the play calling? Is it the, you know, the caliber of, you know, opponent? I think there's some ball security issues, which I think are going to scare NFL teams a little bit. I saw him put the ball on the ground a few times. you know, and then it's just like, you know, again, I think he's held to a very high standard though, because he's the guy who's replacing Saquon Barkley. And, you know, everyone watched so much Saquon Barkley film last year that it's, you know, you walk away, you know, remembering that, and then you see another guy in that Penn State offense, and of course he's not going to be Saquon Barkley, but I think he's going under the radar, and I wouldn't be surprised if he starts to generate a little bit more buzz over the next 2 months than maybe he has right now, you know. And I think sometimes people, you know, again, not really our forte, but some people really do, you know, live and die by the statistics, and he doesn't have, you know, multiple years of production. He didn't break out as a freshman. You know, he barely played as a freshman sophomore as he waited his turn. So I think there's some things with Miles Sanders, you know, that you brought up. I just think this class is so closely regarded. So I think the biggest question is, and let's just take out skill level for a second, and we actually do talk NFL draft for a second. When teams come up on night two, are they going to pull the trigger on these running backs, or are they going to say, you know what, let's go get another edge prospect or an O-line guy, because we know the talent level is going to evaporate there very quickly. And you know what? More up in the fourth round, there's going to be really good running backs left. Think about all the names that you just said. There's going to be a plethora of those guys sitting there in round four. So I think a lot of teams are going to be intrigued with the question of, do we take David Montgomery or Damian Harrison in round two? Or do we wait till round four, get players in round two and round three to help other areas, and then in round four, we go get Elijah Holyfield, you know, Justice Hill, Mike Weber. So I think it's going to be a fascinating, intriguing thing in terms of how it plays itself out in terms of draft capital. So we went off the rails a little bit there. It was a fun conversation. Let's kind of bring it back into Tier 3. Tier 3 is made up of guys who we consider late round 3, so the back part of day 2, or round 4 selection. So everybody kind of goes home after night 2, kind of re-looks at their board, and then, you know, round 4, you start having more compensatory picks. What running backs can go in that range? Dynasty spin, we're talking round 2 to mid round 3 dynasty rookie picks. We think this is a committee type running back with some upside. Some traits are above average. Players offer a competitive advantage as runners or as pass catchers. These players could emerge into bigger roles of the backfield by the end of year 1 or year 2. So I already said my tier 3 is kind of small, and that was Justice Hill. Matt talked about him at length. I agree with a lot of that assessment. I think he's got a lot of talent. Bryce Love out of Stanford, a little bit of the forgotten man. We don't know his medical situation right now. How long is he going to be out? Is he going to be able to play this year? Is it going to be a redshirt rookie season? You know, this was a really down year for him at Stanford, but I can't forget what I saw the year before, that explosion, that burst, that acceleration, that long speed. There's legitimate questions about Bryce Love. He's not the greatest interior short yardage runner. He doesn't have the power and, you know, and the play strength at times. He ran inside a lot because that's Stanford's game, but he doesn't have the play strength to constantly break tackles. He wasn't used much in that, so that tells you a little bit what they maybe feel about him. He's not much of a receiver or what they've asked of him. It's a little bit of an unknown still. I was hoping to see him take strides in that. But Bryce Love has still got a role and talent level that intrigues me, that I'd be okay taking him early in day 3 on my NFL team and then kind of waiting it out. And then I have Elijah Holyfield and Mike Weber, two guys who I think are intriguing. While I think they're similar, I think they're different than the other bigger-bodied guys we're going to come up to in a little bit, because I think there's a little bit more to them athletically. I think Mike Weber, we're taping this days before the combine, so you may or may not listen to this before or after. I still think Mike Weber is going to be a winner at the combine. I think he's going to test out really well athletically. So I think that's going to make him stand out a little bit more than some of the other bigger bodied guys we're going to talk about. I think Elijah Holyfield, he's got that play strength, that power, that toughness, that physicality. I think he's got some quick feet though. I think he's got some lateral quickness, and maybe he's not going to be a guy who's going to, you know, break nasty cuts in the open field and show elusiveness. But I don't think he's just a between the tackles north-south runner. I think he can get to the outside. I think he has some lateral quickness and some quick feet to his game. So that's kind of why I have Holyfield and Weber in this tier ahead of all the other bigger, strong physical power backs that we're going to come to, you know, as we continue this episode. So that's kind of what makes up my tier 3. Matt, I know obviously your tier three's got to have some different names in it because three of my guys were in your tier two.
Yeah, actually my tier three is also small like yours, but it does have some different names. And the first name that really headlines my tier three is Travis Homer, followed by Miles Gaskin, followed by Dexter Williams, and then, as you actually said, Bryce Love ends out my tier three. So, I'll leave kind of – I know Travis Homer is somebody that we both really enjoy. So I'll kind of maybe open that up. Does he fall to you next in round four, in tier four possibly?
He's the first name in tier four, and I've struggled over the last week or two of putting him either in tier three or tier four.
So why don't we have the
Travis Homer conversation right now.
Yeah, why not have that the Travis Homer conversation right now? You know what? I'm just going to offer you a couple of quick things on what I saw from Homer, and we'll see, you know, kind of where you differed or what you thought of him, because he's another one like Miles Sanders where I think we're gonna be in different spots, Paul, than I think the consensus. And I'm okay with that, you know, as long as you can kind of back it up with some reasons and some meaningful data and what you think is the case. When I look at Travis Homer, I mean, in terms of his strength, I think his agility on the outside runs is very good. I think this is where we look at his strengths, and I see a guy who has good cutting ability, good hurdling ability. He's a good route runner. I know he doesn't have a number of receptions, but if you watch him run routes, he's pretty deceptive in his stems. He may not have gotten the action as a receiver, but I see more from him as a route runner than maybe meets the eye. And if you watch him, even though he wasn't getting the football, he really did show some nice deceptive movement as a route runner in the open field. And I felt really good about what I was seeing from him. And it made me say to myself, you know, this is a guy that if they can get him involved in the passing game, I think he could be very interesting. But his agility, like I said, on outside runs, cutting ability, his ability to hurdle, he has good sensitivity in the open field. He has good route deception, like I was saying, as a route runner. He can really manipulate, as I said, through his stems. I think he's functional in pass pro. I think he feels the blitz well, and he understands how to make first contact to really kind of stunt the momentum of pass rushers, not allow them to really get up a full head of steam. I think he has agility on interior runs. I think he has the ability to make multiple cutting ability and hurdling. He could do all that on the interior. And he has contact fidelity that's pretty functional. I think he shows good awareness and a good brace. The only concern I have is I think, you know, when it comes to separating sometimes, I don't think he necessarily separates. Even though he loves contact and even though he relishes in it at times, I don't think he's continuously separates and breaks through contact. I think he has a little bit separation issues in terms of keeping those feet moving all the time. So that's something I would say to him is, you know, listen, you're already brave enough to go ahead and do it. You see that as a big part of your game. Just keep pumping those, you know, just keep pumping those legs, keep fighting through contact, fight to separate, you know. In terms of his cutting and reacceleration strategies, I think he kind of lacks calibration on the interior. And by calibration, I mean, he hasn't really scaled. He hasn't scaled the information that you get in a running on the interior play that he does on the outside. And by calibrating, I mean he hasn't scaled it to his body. He hasn't scaled it to his own physical abilities. I think he recognizes the information, but I don't think he's really tuned his instrument, which is his body, to reacting in a way that allows him to exploit those things that he sees. So I think he sees the holes. I think he sees the opportunities. You can see it in his body language as he approaches interior runs, but he hasn't really calibrated everything in his physical capacities to exploiting it, to really showing that he can kind of, you know, really make you pay if you take a bad pursuit angle on the interior. He hasn't done that yet. And this is where, again, you know, Paul and I, we talk about skill. We're talking about movement behavior. This is where we talk. You hear how my language is a little different. I'm trying to describe him as a problem solver. He sees the information. He just hasn't calibrated his physical capabilities to exploiting that and taking advantage of it. And because he can't do it on the interior, I really do think that that's something that's going to deter people at the next level from grabbing him early. And I think that's a mistake, because I think with experience, I think the kid can be really, really solid for your team in a variety of ways. So, Paul, that's my short thoughts on him. What do you think he is? And more concerned, I didn't mention this, what type of scheme do you kind of see him in?
Yeah, listen, I mean, I think you brought up a lot of really good points about Homer. And for a guy who's 195 pounds, I don't know if I've ever seen a 195-pound back run with more physicality and more toughness. And I think that will intrigue NFL teams, because he combines that with his athleticism, with his change of direction skills, you know, with his receiving ability that I think is underutilized at Miami. So I think he's a really intriguing prospect that, you know, kind of had a little bit of a down final year, but Miami as a team kind of, you know, could be part of that. You know, in terms of where, what scheme, I like him on the outside. I like him, you know, I think he's more of an outside perimeter runner. You know, I think that's probably his area of strength. I think that's kind of how NFL teams will kind of utilize him. You know, I think he can probably do either gap or zone out there in terms of his running capabilities. You know, I think a blend of both is fine. I don't think there's one that is way superior that he's incapable of running the other one. But I do see him more as a perimeter runner that, yeah, he can mix it up inside because he's got that willingness to compete and that competitive toughness. But like you were just saying, though, I think there are some instances where he didn't show as much in between the tackles as he did in the perimeter. So I'm intrigued by him. He's a guy that I think preseason I had probably, you know, in that 7 to 9 range. A lot of running backs have kind of emerged this year that were a little bit off the radar. So he's moved down, obviously, a little bit in my overall rankings. But I think a lot of people, you're not going to see him in top 15s or top 14s or top 12s. I think a lot more people are going to kind of just have him at the back end of their rankings in the 20s. And I think that would be a mistake because I do think he has an intriguing skill set, capable of playing on all three downs and be a little bit scheme versatile in terms of his capabilities at the next level.
Well, you know what? I mean, I agree with all that. And there's a player, though, that in this particular tier that I just want to mention before we move on. But I got to say that the last guy that I would bring up is Myles Gaskin, because he dropped for me a little bit, but I really did rewatch him thoroughly, and I really still like his game. You know, when you look at him overall, strengths-wise, first and second level vision is really good. He has a good sensitivity to the angle of attack and his pursuit velocities of first and second level defenders, especially scraping linebackers. He allows them. He understands how to manipulate them. He has good ball security. He had basically 3 fumbles in 716 touches. And his calibration of pressure cuts and acceleration moves were really impressive. He really does have a wide range of different ways to parameterize or control those different types of cuts to adapt to situations. So he's a really, really good runner when it comes to making guys miss. You know, I mean, functional, he's got functional acceleration, functional agility on interior runs. His contact fidelity, his awareness, his brace, really good. His receiving ability, I think he tracks the ball well over his shoulder. I think he was vastly underutilized as a receiver, even though he had 21 receptions. His concerns, I think, is anchor and pass pro. Even though he's brave enough to go ahead and do it, I don't think he's a guy that's very effective in pass pro. And I think his contact fidelity in terms of creating separation after contact, really barreling through defenders, is not his strength. He really does belong, in my opinion, in a zone scheme. I think that's where he would be best utilized. And I think he's a player that somebody's going to get probably in day 3. And I think he's going to end up being a bargain.
Yeah, listen, it's hard to argue with what you just said there. I think, you know, I think that's something that's intriguing. It's another name. It just kind of shows you the depth at which we're talking about here in this running back class. I don't think it's a class that has that top end talent, but I do think it's pretty deep. I do believe it's deep and it's a little bit unique. So with that, let's kind of go to tier 4. Tier 4 is made up of guys who we think are basically round 4 to round 6. So some guys who, you know, I know last one also went into round 4, but again, there's so much diversity here that we think these are guys that could go off the board somewhere in round 4 or 5 or 6. So while it stretches out over 3 rounds, we think these are closer to round 5 or round 6 guys. Some might get pushed up to round 4. We don't really see these guys as possibilities to go on day 2, which tier 3, we have that late round 3 component because we think it's possible some of those guys could sneak in the top 100 area. So tier 4, dynasty spin, round 3, round 4, dynasty rookie picks. These are the lesser parts of a handcuff. Lesser parts of a committee, or they're good handcuffs. Several solid traits. These players have a complementary skill set that could develop into a specialized role or a lesser part of a committee in the future and are capable of leading the backfield and maintaining the integrity of the offense if called upon due to injuries. My tier four, really wide tier here, lots of guys who I think warrant being selected somewhere in those rounds on day three. It starts with Travis Homer, followed up by Miles Gaskin, players that were in your tier previously. So I'll skip by them. Next up for me is Darwin Thompson at Utah State. He is unfortunately was not invited to the combine, but when you watch this kid play, to me, it's hard not to see Tariq Cohen. I think it was Dane Brugler who was the first one who I heard mention Darwin Thompson, put on the film of him, and you walk away really impressed with Darwin Thompson as both a runner and is both as a receiver. So he's an intriguing guy who NFL teams could look at as that unique playmaker to kind of add to their offense. Next up, I have Tony Pollard out of Memphis. He's another one of those Swiss Army guys, very much like a Nyheim Hines. He can be a receiver, a rusher, a returner, really diversified skill set. So you see my first four guys there, Homer, Gaskins, Thompson, and Pollard. You know, they're all guys who I don't think any team is going to build an offense around, but I can see them being having unique roles, whether it's change of pace receiving guy, whether it's a guy like Miles Gaskin offers some of that agility, elusiveness, change of direction. Darwin Thompson and Tony Pollard, that versatility, that receiving component. So does Gaskin, so does Homer. So all those first four guys in this tier offer receiving capabilities, offer the capabilities to complement a more power type of interior runner in a backfield. So I think they all have that unique skill set. After that, it's a big group of guys who I would consider power backs. Raquel Armstead out of Temple, Dexter Williams out of Notre Dame, Divine Azigbo out of Nebraska, Alexander Madison out of Boise State, LJ Scott out of Michigan State, and then my tier rounds out with James Williams out of Washington State, Ty Johnson out of Maryland, and Benny Snell out of Kentucky. Of those bigger physical guys, Armstead, Williams, Azigbo, Madison, Scott, and Snell, Armstead, Williams, and Azigbo intrigue me the most. I think Azigbo and Dexter Williams have the most athleticism to their game, the most burst, quickness. I think Azigbo's got some elusiveness in the open field, can get to the outside. I think Armstead, his physicality, his contact fidelity, I think are outstanding. He reminds me a lot of a Samaje Perine type coming out of college. I know Perine hasn't had the NFL career that many thought he might have, but I can see that in Armstead. You know, if there's a guy taken on day three who could have like a Chris Carson type thing, I can see Raquel Armstead always fighting, forward lean, breaking tackles. I can see somebody like Raquel Armstead in that. Benny Snell, I have some more question marks about his overall athleticism, so he's more at the bottom of my tier. And then towards the bottom of this tier, I have James Williams and Ty Johnson, a couple specialists in my opinion. James Williams might be one of the best receiving backs in this draft class. I think he's a very James White-esque player. It's a very easy comp, but I think it's true. And then Ty Johnson out of Maryland, the guy we talked about, the Shrine Game. I think he's the definition of a change of pace guy, explosive in the open field. You get this guy 6 to 10 touches a game. He can make an impact in your offense. And he showed really well receiving at the Shrine Game, which could increase his overall versatility and his role at the next level. But for me, you're drafting him based on his burst acceleration and his long speed to complement other players in your backfield, but offer that home run-like ability.
Yeah, I'm not going to really belabor this because I know there's a lot of players in here. And I thought maybe what I'll do is I'll just pick a player or two that I did that you mentioned or that I did like in this tier. Sure. I'll read them out and then we'll kind of maybe rapid fire the last tier. So what I do have is I have Raquel Armstead leading off my tier four. Then I have Demarie Crockett behind him. Then I had Divine Ozigbo. Then I have Tony Pollard. I have Jalen Moore, followed by Ty Johnson, Benny Snell, LJ Scott, and Karan Higdon. The only guys that I'll really kind of pull out, because I think you did a really nice job kind of packaging the different features of these players. Out of this entire group, the one that I would kind of slot and say I'm most intrigued about busting out of this, if we're talking about a tier buster, the guy that I'm most intrigued about busting out of this is I can see a reality where Ty Johnson could bust out. I do see a reality. And you went and already talked about how he did shine, how he has shown well. He played well even last year. And he was really much higher in my preseason rankings than he is right now. So, I mean, he's a guy that I kind of continue to be intrigued by just because of what he can do in terms of his agility in the open field. Just the way he reads the plays, both inside and outside. I do see a player that is capable of being somebody that could end up being part of a committee in a more kind of complete way. So he's a guy that I think could really bust out of here if there's a guy busting out of these tiers. If we go into tier five, Paul, I'm just going to go ahead and read my tier five, and then I'll just kind of pick a name that I really like, and then I'll go ahead and just kind of pivot back to you if that's okay.
Sure.
So in my last tier, I've got in our tier five, and just out of just so everybody understands what our tier breakdown is, if you're in tier five, this is like a late round pick, a UDFA selection in the NFL draft. These guys would be late round watch list dynasty rookie picks. These are going to be players that would be more like depth or practice squad players, and they have some solid traits, and they can stabilize a backfield in case of an emergency, but these are not long-term solutions. These are guys that are there to just stabilize you for a moment so that way you can continue on with your business. This may also include players with limited exposures as well, especially as we're working through rankings. That you're going to hear from me, there's a couple of guys that Paul mentioned that I'm still working through. So, Paul, in my tier five, as I kind of begin to finalize this list, I've got Alexander Mattson leading it off, followed by Jordan Scarlett, then Nick Brossette from LSU, followed by Alex Barnes, Jacquez Patrick from FSU, Quadre Allison from Pittsburgh, and then here are some players that I have to watch some more film on. Darren Hall from Pittsburgh. I have to watch Darwin Thompson from Utah State, James Williams from Washington State, and Wes Hills from Slippery Rock. So those are guys that are still on my kind of to-do list, but they fall into this tier for me just for that reason. So if you heard Paul talk about Darwin Thompson, I'm not any different than him. I don't know yet. So that's something that we'll update as we go. But Paul, out of this entire list, the guy that most intrigues me is probably a guy like Nick Brossette. I really like Nick Brossette. I thought he showed well, at the All-Star games. I thought he showed well. I thought he showed a versatile tool set. I do think he's a player that shows the ability to run on the inside. He does have good hands. He does have the ability to make some plays in the open field. So Nick Brossette is a guy that stands out to me in this tier as somebody who could catapult themselves out.
Yeah, listen, I like Nick Brossette's game. I know it doesn't sound sexy, but I've been saying since we saw him at the Shrine game that he could be like a Brandon Bolden type player because he's versatile to impact special teams, short yardage runner with good short bursts and quickness, and a good receiving guy. He's a guy who, you know, went a little bit under the radar. I could see him, I think same school too, a guy like Spencer Ware, kind of like gets drafted somewhere, kind of waits it out, and could be a guy that if he gets an opportunity, could be a very solid functional player at the next level. So let me just take this to my tier five. Obviously, tier five, I know we kind of skip by it. These are guys that we think are late round or UDF picks, late round or watch list or your dynasty rookie drafts. We think these are depth or practice squad type players to start off. Can stabilize the backfield in the case of emergency, but probably not the long-term solutions. This also includes players that we have limited exposures to make a full determination yet at this time. So my tier five starts out with Jalen Moore out of Appalachian State, Bruce Anderson out of North Dakota State, Nick Brossette out of LSU, Karan Higdon out of Michigan, Darren Hall out of Pittsburgh, Quadre Allison out of Pittsburgh, Alex Barnes out of Kansas State, Demarie Crockett out of Missouri, Jordan Scarlett out of Florida, Jacquez Patrick out of FSU, and then Wes Hills out of Slippery Rock. The guys here, Matt already talked about Nick Brossette. I think Bruce Anderson is a little bit of a unique player in terms of his versatile skill set. I think he's a guy who's a solid runner, good receiver, runs tough, but also can make some plays in the open field. So he's an intriguing late-round guy. Quadre Allison's a guy who's got good linear speed. He reminds me a lot of Josh Adams from last year. Not going to do in terms of straight-line speed. He might even test better, you know, when they do those like adjusted tests from the combine in terms of, you know, weight and 40. I think Allison could be pretty good in that actually for a man his size. But I actually like Darren Hall, his teammate out of Pittsburgh, a little bit better. I was actually surprised Hall wasn't invited to the combine. I think he's got a little bit more juice, a little bit more explosiveness and burst to his game, and a little bit more ability to play laterally a little bit. So he has some lateral quickness as well. Jaquez Patrick, really big guy out of Florida State. It's a better receiver than you might think for a bigger guy, but he's more of an interior guy, run between the tackles. And then obviously Jalen Moore got hurt out of Appalachian State. Intriguing guy. You know, a guy who you wish was more active and involved in the receiving game, because they do kind of like his rushing ability a little bit, but we're talking about a guy from a lower level of competition and then coming off a serious injury as well. So he's down there in tier five. So there it is. We're talking about over 35 running backs that we've kind of broke down into these tiers. I think there's not a lot separating a lot of these guys in the middle of this. And I think that's what makes for such an intriguing rest of the pre-draft process. And then obviously, you know, draft weekend, sorting this out, you know, are there any surprises of guys that go a lot earlier than maybe we're not even expecting, or vice versa? Some guys who we think are legitimate, you know, top three rounds, top four rounds, and are sitting there round six or round seven. You know, there could be some big surprises because teams are drafting based on who they think is going to fit in the landscape of their offense and their team and potentially complement what is already on the roster. So I think that is important. You know, grading players and on terms of skill and talent, the way Matt and I do it, are very different than what NFL teams are, how they're evaluating for their team, for their offense, for what they need and what they're looking for. So it's not an apples to apples comparison when you're evaluating, you know, holistically every single player, or where you're evaluating for a specific team offense and depth chart that you already have. So Matt, any kind of parting shots here on the running back position? Any follow-up questions before we call it a night?
So no, I think that really when it comes down to it, I think that that was pretty good. But I did want to mention Bruce Anderson for some reason was a typo. He is in my tier five, but he is a guy that I would probably put right next to Nick Brossette as a player that could emerge. And the reason being is that when you look at him, I think he's a very, very solid and functional receiver. I think he has the ability to be a good receiver. I think he could improve in those areas. And I think his agility in the open field are concerns right now. But I think a lot of that has to do with that he lacks that kind of perceptual awareness about how to handle linebackers. But I think that's something that can happen, and that's something that he can develop with. So I think Bruce Anderson from North Dakota State, I would put right next to Nick Brossette. But other than that, Paul, I agree with you. There's a lot of razor-thin margins between a lot of these players. And I think to your point, I would say this. We're trying to analyze in a vacuum, like you said. And analyzing in a vacuum is much more difficult than analyzing with an entire roster in front of you. We don't understand what traits, what responsibilities, and what tasks we really need our players to fulfill. So it's really difficult to figure that out. So, Paul, just to end this, since we've been kind of running this theme, give me a scuba player. Give me a guy who's outside of your top five that you think is a player that you're going to kind of latch on to, pull for, cheer for, and maybe even draft on your fantasy team.
Yeah, I mean, if we're just keeping it outside the top five right there, I think this is a little bit of cheating because I have these guys all so close, but my guy would be Trevion Williams. So I still don't think he's getting the attention that he deserves. So I'll kind of pump him up a little bit. I really like Trevion Williams, the player. I think in the world that we have of multiple backfields, I think if you have a really strong power interior runner, you know, that can get the tough yards, I think Trevion Williams can complement that because, A, Trevion Williams runs really hard and tough himself, but I think he's got that explosion and that burst, that acceleration, and he's a guy who can immediately play on third downs because of his pass protection. And I love a guy who I know the NFL is going to really trust sooner rather than later, because that means he's going to get on the field. And when we're talking fantasy and talking drafts, Give me a guy like Trevion Williams, who I think is going to get on the field pretty quickly because of his pass protection capabilities. And then when he's on the field, I think you're going to see some of those game-breaking talents that he has and those big playability that he could offer.
So since you already took the guy that I was going to take, I'm going to have to move to somebody different. And I'm going to go a little bit – I'm going to zig where you zagged, and I'm going to go really off the rafters. I'm going to take Elijah Holyfield. I'm going to take Elijah Holyfield as a guy that I think will immediately see NFL playing time, if for nothing else, because I think he does immediately improve as a pass protector. And I see him as a guy who can immediately be a goal line back. I think immediately a team's going to say, we have a complimentary guy that can maybe play in the open field. This is a guy who we think could drive in the touchdowns. And I think you could see a guy like Holyfield be that guy for a team. So I think that's immediately where he is. And I think that he could emerge into much more. So I think Holyfield would be very interesting. Paul, let's go submarine depth. Let's go into the deep, deep depths of our actual roster. Let's go really into that tier three, tier four range and pick a sleeper, a real sleeper. For me, if I'm going to go really off the rails, you kind of mentioned him earlier, I'm going to probably say that I'm going to go with Ty Johnson coming out of nowhere. I'm going to say Ty Johnson comes out of nowhere and ends up being a committee back that ends up getting regular playing time because he ends up figuring it all out in terms of what he can do in pass pro, what he can do as a receiver, what he can do in the open field. I can see him being part of an RPO scheme. I'm going to go submarine and say Ty Johnson's the guy I'm keeping my tabs on.
Yeah, listen, I really like Ty Johnson. I was totally going to cheat. I was going to say I had three open seats in my submarine, and one of them was going to be for Ty Johnson, and the other two were going to be for Darwin Thompson out of Utah State and Tony Pollard out of Memphis. I love, and just when I'm ranking players and I'm putting players in between tiers, I love versatility. I love guys that I think the NFL is so much more becoming a specialized role of. A lot more offensive-minded coaches are finding ways to maximize skill sets and use the strengths of players to make an impact in terms of the offense. And I think a guy like Darwin Thompson and Tony Pollard are going to be those versatile chess pieces. I don't know if they're going to be great fantasy assets. That's going to end up having to depend where they go, what your league settings are. You're going to need, you know, PPR for these guys. It's going to depend on how much the running backs are heavily involved, you know, in the passing game. But I think both of these guys have skill, big play ability. And I love big play ability. Guys who can impact it, receiving, rushing, or returning. That's both of these guys. And I think, you know, very much what we saw out of Nyheim Hines this year, Tariq Cohen this year, who took a big step. I think both Pollard and Thompson could be players in that type of vein and make an impact real quick in the NFL level because of their unique and versatile skill sets. Matt, any final parting shots here before we wrap it up?
No, I think it was really, there's a lot of room here. There's a lot of discussion points. All I would say to everybody out there is landing spot matters. It does matter. It matters because the environments change, the tasks change, the pressure changes, all of the focus changes, and all of that information, all of that framework, all of that infrastructure is going to really shape a lot of these guys differently. Some of these guys will look like they did in college. Others are going to dramatically change the way they behave at the next level. And I think that can't be mistaken or taken lightly. I think there are going to be guys that could make that leap. Mike Weber, Miles Sanders, show why they were overlooked and set the world on fire. Philip Lindsay. And then there are going to be guys that are really highly touted and don't necessarily make anything of it. So I think it really is going to depend where they land and the opportunity they have in front of them. But things will change the minute they're drafted.
Yeah, absolutely. We know all the time that landing spots and opportunity matter a lot. But right now, it's still so fun just talking about these guys, these players in terms of their skill set. You know, we are never people who really hone in on the statistics. So this period of time, this pre-draft season, is just so fun talking about the skill sets that these players offer. There's so much time after the draft to talk when we recap for about a month and a half what happened on draft weekend. Then we can start to kind of tie it into, you know, depth chart, opportunity. But right now, it's all about evaluating their skill set, their traits. And I think it's so fun to kind of, you know, utilize what we've seen already and then still know that there's more. I know for a fact, for the running backs, some areas of the tight end and the wide receivers, I am going to use the combine as another data point to kind of help me rearrange some guys in a tier, whether it's those big backs, whether it's big wide receivers, whether it's a couple smaller school tight ends, you know, that, you know, there's only so much film we can get on them. So we maybe don't have a great read yet on their athleticism. I want to see them at the combine. I want to use that as a data point to kind of help me rearrange guys within tiers, see if it makes me jump up a guy. Now listen, there could be, we've already talked about guys on the tip of the next tier who could just jump up naturally as we watch more film, but I'm interested to kind of see the use the combine as another way of rearranging and organizing within these tiers. It's just another thing. Hopefully more film becomes available on some guys. It's a great time. We still got 2 months before, you know, the NFL draft is here, and we're going to keep grinding away. Next week, we'll have combine recaps for both the offensive and the defensive side. For the first time this year, we will bring on some IDP experts to talk the defensive prospects, to start getting you familiarized with them. And then once we get into after that, we start lining up regular guests for about a month and a half, because you've heard Matt and I give our takes on a lot of guys, and we will continue to do that in these other shows, but it's also time to bring on some of the great experts out there, pick their brain, talk through some of these guys with them, and just kind of continue to evolve, adapt, and learn about these guys, learn from each other, because I think that's so great. I love going on Twitter, communicating with people just to continue to learn about players. Again, a big thanks to all the people that have recently purchased the premium notebooks. Again, if you're interested, please get to the website. Speaking of the website, we have a new website. Please go check it out. We are going to start utilizing it a little bit more. You can access the website by either typing in the old Saturday, the number 2, sundayfootball.com. But you also can now access the website by just typing in s2sfootball.com as well. So now you have two ways to access it. Click on the premium content tab, click on it, purchase, add to the cart, and you get $9.99. You get access to all 4 notebooks. If you're interested to see what our scouting profiles look like, you can find a full preview on the pin at the top of our S2S football handle. You could also look through that handle and see a lot of tweets where we've been putting out quick slants, where we've been sharing some of our profiles out there on Twitter for people to see, and just kind of learn about what Matt and I are doing. You get the rankings notebook with all our rankings, draft eligible, our tiers, dynasty rookie rankings after the draft, our Devy rankings, and so much more. And then you get the freshman notebook in late March or April, which will have profiles on many of the incoming freshmen, and then the draft projections notebook in April as well. So please get over there, purchase it. It is the best way to support the show. If you can't do that, please get on whatever podcast app you have, rate, review, and subscribe. Matt, any final last shot here before we call it a night?
Nope. Honest to God, I'm excited for the combine. Let her rip, man. Get the popcorn, get the soda.
Absolutely. And guys, if you have just came across us, if you miss any of the other Tier Buster episodes, make sure you go back and listen to them, because they're not really outdated information. That is, you know, as much info as Matt and I go into the individual positions and really share our thoughts on these guys. I mean, besides that, the only other shows that we really dig that deep into prospect talk, you know, on that type of level is the ones before the year starts, when we go through and do multiple quarterback preview shows, multiple running back, multiple wide receiver, and a tight end show. And then obviously we talk about these guys all year, but these are really the deepest dives that we go into these guys. They're really, they're shows that we put a lot of time and effort into, and the feedback we get on them is often very, very highly regarded and means a lot to Matt and I. So please check them out. If you just caught this running back one, please go back and make sure you download and check out the tight end one, quarterback one, and wide receiver one as well. So on behalf of Matt, on behalf of our sound and tech engineer, David Nakano, and myself, thank you for joining us. And we look forward next time taking you from Saturday to Sunday.